All right, we are here with Ed Carey, and he's got some funny stories about a mutual friend of ours, Laura Prey, a mutual brother of ours, and he's known him for quite a while. Take it away.
Thanks. I first met Laura Prey in the late 60s. He lived three doors down from what eventually became my in-laws. And I had two brothers-in-law who Laura hung around with. And that's how I met Laura. And Laura tells me now that back then in the 60s, I was their Fonzarelli. And he says he remembers how I used to wrestle him and my two brothers-in-law at the same time. He said, we couldn't believe that you wrestled three guys at once. And I said, well, I only wrestled one of you at a time because I would throw one guy on top of the other two. And while they were trying to untangle themselves, I only had one guy to deal with. And then I would eventually throw one guy on the other two and then deal with one guy at a time again. So,
did you know Laura before you became a Mason, or did you already?
I met him in the 60s, and I became a Mason in 97. And what happened was, my partner and I from work had gone to a school somewhere near Tecumseh because they were having, it was called Candles for Cuba. And my partner and I were considering going in to do Candles for Cuba. And Laura was there when he was a videographer with the radio station. So I went up to him from behind and I said, hi, Laura. I said, do not get my partner and I in the film because we're here during work and shouldn't be here. So I happened to mention to him that I'm becoming a Mason. And he said, well, him and his dad were Masons. So Laura and his dad, and they got a bunch of other guys to come to my first degree. So I had quite a good showing for my first degree, thanks to Laura Prey and his dad, Chip.
What was your favorite memory of Masonry so far?
You know, when I joined Masonry, my wife and I sometimes would get into a disagreement, and I could sometimes be ornery, and my wife would say, is that what they teach you down there? So I'd say, yeah, you know what, you're right. So that kind of Masonry grounded me. And when I was going to school, I was painfully shy, stuck to myself, hated having to do speeches. And when I joined Masonry, for some reason, I really enjoyed going out and doing the lectures. And we were having some sort of a educational session, and various guys were going to go down on the floor and talk. And the session was running long. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, rats, I'm not going to get a chance to go down there and talk. And I surprised myself that I was really looking forward to going downstairs and not down the stairs and onto the level to give a lecture. And I thought, boy, that's certainly not like me to want to talk in front of people. So that's one of the things that I like about Masonry, too, is it basically took me out of my shell and just made me give me a lot more confidence in myself. So that's basically my feeling of Masonry, is it really helped me grow emotionally and mentally, and gave me a lot more self-confidence.
So. What offices have you held? I don't think I actually know.
Pardon me?
What offices in Masonry have you held?
Well, when I joined, I started as junior deacon. That was my first chair. And then I progressed to senior deacon and then junior warden. And then they wanted me to go from senior deacon to junior warden. And I talked to Brother Bill Atkinson, senior. And he said, you know what, Eddie, I would advise you not to do that. So I went to the lodge and I said, look, it's not fair to the lodge. It's not fair to me to skip senior warden, or to skip junior warden's chair. I know it's a difficult chair because you got to make the food and all that, but I said, I'm not comfortable skipping that chair. Right at that time, Brother John Revelle, who used to belong to a lodge in Florence, joined Great Western. And he said, well, when I was in Florence Lodge, I was the senior warden. So Great Western said, well, even though he was junior to Great Western, to me, we said, let's put John Revelle, Brother John Revelle, into the senior warden's place. That allowed me to go to junior warden. And I was quite appreciative of that. And I'm kind of different. I always like to do things that nobody's done before, maybe. So the very first meal I made when I was junior warden, I thought, what can I bring that probably nobody's brought before to a meal for a junior warden session? So I brought a 6-foot submarine. And I'll tell you, you try to bring a 6-foot submarine on that elevator.
That would not be easy.
No. They had a whole bunch of pizza boxes stapled together. And then that's what they put the sandwich in. So that was a little different.
I'm sure the guys appreciated, you know, anything that's different. People like. Although I say that I tried a few different meals when I was junior warden, and I still don't hear the end of it from my guys. So.
And you know, when I was junior warden, I got a loose leaf book. A small loose leaf book. And I wrote down the date of the meeting and what the meeting was, whether it was a regular meeting, like a business meeting, an emergent meeting, a degree, a special meeting of whatever sort. And I put down how many guys were there. Then I very precisely listed all the food that I'd brought. Like if it was lunch meat, I listed how much of each meats that I brought, and then, I put down how much food was left over, and I felt that eventually we get a history of preparing food. The guy behind me can look at that date, look at that event, and say, well, look at, he brought this much food, and there was 40% food left over. So I could probably reduce the amount of food by a percentage and not have so much wastage. So that's what we did. But unfortunately, the guy behind me never followed that book, and somehow that book disappeared. So
record keeping is, I always try, you know, to keep a record of everything I do in Masonry.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
It's always helpful.
Yeah. When I was working, I worked in what we called the chiller room, and that's where the air compressors were. Every hour, I had to go and read the charts. They were the circular charts with the needle that made a graph up and down. And then every hour, I had to go and take a reading of all the different temperatures and pressures in that. Well, then I converted them to a graph. And then I printed them out, and I taped them to the wall in the chiller room. I had eventually had like a 20-foot long graph of the stats of how these charts were going. And I felt that with a long chart like that, we could eventually predict highs and lows on the usage of the air compressors. And again, nobody followed it after me, so... But I really believe in history, in record keeping.
No, it's an important part of Masonry for sure. What's your favorite lecture in Masonry? Or do you have one?
When I first joined Masonry, the master called me up. And in those days, I felt that the master was God. We really owed a lot of our attention and loyalty to the master. So the master called me up. And he said, Eddie, we need a couple lectures. We're short on a couple. And he gave me two different lectures. And in those days, because I had just started Masonry, I didn't know much about the lectures. So I called up the brother who got me into Masonry. At that time, it was Right Worshipful Brother Carl Olander. And I said to Carl, look, it, they want me to do one of these two lectures. What would you suggest? He said, okay, retrospect is longer and it's harder, but that's the one we need the most. So that was the very first lecture that I learned, was retrospect.
Great one.
And you know what? The other day, I'm talking to Dan Chamney on the phone, and he says, well, I was asking Brother Pat Charchick. He says, we're talking about my memory and how bad it is lately. He says, do you remember your lectures from way back? And right like that, having taken the great and solemn obligation of a Master Mason, you are now at liberty to demand of me. I said, I know all those things. But I said, the other day, I'm having a problem getting my stair lift out of my old apartment. So the guy that's going to move it gave me 3 days, which is available for him to move them. The next day, I couldn't remember what 3 days he gave me. I had to go and look at the notes I had written. So I don't remember what happened yesterday, but I remember what happened 20 years ago.
That's like a lot of people. I'm the same way a lot of times. I have a bad memory. But yeah. I can remember my lectures. That retrospect is a heck of a lecture. The best I've ever heard it done is by Worship Brother Paul Pesci in Windsor Lodge. I've had the chance, I've been lucky enough to see a lot of third degrees and a lot of different lodges. But my mother lodge, Paul Pesci, does it, and he does an amazing job of it. It's a hell of a lecture. So yep. If that's your first one too, it's very impressive, because that's a big one to chew.
April of 97 is when I joined Masonry. And near the end of 97, I called the master up and I said, would you mind if I started running, what did I call him now? Chat sessions. He said, what's a chat session? I said, I want to get the guys together, maybe go to a restaurant. Like they used to do in the old days, they used to meet above a bar. I said, I want to take all the guys to a restaurant, we'll sit down and have a meal, but then we'll have a discussion about Masonry after the meal. And the very first lecture I gave, I had, at that time, Brother Jerry McCory. I said, come and give me a hand with it. And I said, you start by giving the lecture, reading the lecture of Ecclesiastes, because that's what Jerry used to do. And I said, you give a first line and I'll tell you what the meaning was. And I can't remember it in order. I've given that lecture, but not enough to remember it in its entirety. But one of the lectures, like Ecclesiastes is, because it's the third degree, it's man in his old age. So one of the lines is, and the almond tree shall flourish. And they feel that King Solomon wrote that lecture. They felt that that meant that a man in his old age, his hair turns white. The grinders shall cease because they are few. They felt that he was losing his teeth. And all the different portions of that lecture, there's an explanation of what we attribute as the meaning of those now. Man shall go to his long home, they felt, went to his grave. Those that look out the window shall be darkened because his eyesight's failing. And all those different things. And Jerry gave the first line, I gave the explanation to it. What my intention was back in those days, and like I was only a Mason for 8 or 9 months at that time, but I felt that we can inspire the young new Masons, and we could maybe light a fire under the senior Masons who kind of drift away from Masonry a little bit. Let's get some fire back under them and get them interested back into Masonry. And I said, don't just listen to a lecture. Think about what the lecture means. Think about what the lecture is telling you. So that was one of the things that I used to, and I ran every Thursday for almost 5 years. I had a chat session, and I picked a different restaurant. Quite often it was like they would give me a private room and I'd have, you know, 20, 25 guys there. We'd have lunch, we'd have some fellowship, and we'd have some Masonic discussions. So I kind of like that too, but I like to do a lot of things, but I get burned out easy too. So after 5 years of doing that, I just didn't do them anymore.
It sounds great though. That happens though, right? I mean, I find there are a lot of people who do a lot, but it can be easy to get burned out if you're not taking care of yourself at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very, I never heard those explanations for Ecclesiastes. That's really cool.
Yes.
A really interesting way to think about it.
Yeah.
I always just took it literally, but.
Man shall rise up with the bird, which means men in our older age, we get up earlier. Oh. And the daughters of music shall be a burden. The grasshopper shall be a burden. Which kind of means small things now bother you. The daughters of music shall fail you, or I forget the exact line on that one. But what that's kind of meaning is that the man's hearing is not as good as it used to be. The whole explanation, it's an awesome explanation. I really enjoy it.
That is really very cool.
Yeah.
That's probably I'm sure a lot of brethren will find that really awesome.
Yeah.
Where do you see Masonry going in the future?
That's a tough one. And, you know, the thing is, this is my opinion of Masonry. Back in the early 50s, the war hadn't been over very long. And when the war was over, men were coming home looking for something to do. And in those days, I also believed that in the early 50s, most women stayed at home. So when the woman was home, the man would come home from work, dinner would be on the table, he'd eat dinner, he'd get changed, and he'd go out to a lodge meeting. Later on, when it became kind of almost necessary for a woman in the family to work, when the man got home from work, his wife was getting home at the same time, together they prepared the meal and cleaned up after the meal. By then it was later in the evening. He wasn't quite as fresh and maybe as energetic as he used to be. So he stopped going out a lot of times. And I think that's when Masonry started to decline membership. Now, it's two working people in a family. And it's more difficult for a man to get to a lodge meeting. And that saddens me that we can't visit lodges as often as we should or would like to. So
it's a challenge. Do you have any, you know, I've heard a lot of different ideas about options and ways to deal with what you're talking about, which is, you know, the rise of two-income households, the challenges of there's just less spare time than there used to be.
Yeah.
Right, and how do you find a way to combat that? I've heard people suggest lodges need to provide childcare, because if you have a two-income household and the wife or mother is working in the evenings, the guy has to take his kids with him to lodge maybe in order to attend a meeting. Or I've heard lots of different ideas.
Yeah.
So it's hard to figure out.
And that's not without its challenges, because if you provide health care, you need to ensure that the caregivers are trained caregivers, that they're doing properly what they should be doing. And you know what? Today, these days, I believe there's a lot more extracurricular activities. You know, there's more things for a person outside of lodge to do than there used to. Back in the 50s, there was a lodge. Not much else going on. And now there's so much other things that a gentleman and or his wife can be involving themselves in, that Masonry starts to take a second seat.
It's true. It's hard. I've got my own ideas about things. People think I'm crazy, but I've been saying for a while that there needs to be a more professional component to Masonry.
I'm sorry, when that overhead goes on, I don't hear you.
No, I've been saying for a while there needs to be a more professional component to Masonry. There needs to be, because if the argument goes, right, family work Masons, which is what you're always told,
yeah,
right, Masonry at best will come third place in your life.
Yeah.
And as family and as work take up more and more time in a man's life, right? Unless you can find a way to combine masonry with work or make masonry a professional endeavor for at least a few guys, the sphere in which you have time to go to lodge is going to reduce and reduce and reduce. So that's always been my theory, but it's hard because it's never been that way before, and how do you find a way to make it work that way?
Now, my grandfather, my mother's dad, Harold Parker, this I find is kind of interesting too. My grandfather, Harold Parker, worked at Ford Motor Company, and back in the 50s, kind of the philosophy was, if you wanted to advance in Ford Motor Company, it was best that you were a Mason. Another thing now is my grandfather passed away, and younger fellas today, a lot of them don't like to go to a funeral, Masonic funeral. And there was a fellow named Bernie Baker, belonged to, I think, Palace Lodge. And I said to Bernie one day, Bernie, did you ever know a man named Harold Parker? He goes, no, I didn't. My mother gave me the sign-up sheet that the Masons signed at my grandfather's funeral, and Bernie Baker had signed it. So here's my thought now. Here's a man who did not know the brother whose funeral he was going to, but he went to the man's funeral. And I try to say to the brothers today, you might not know the man, but he is a brother. And 20 years later, maybe a relative of that individual will realize that you went to his funeral and be appreciative of the fact that you went to his relative's funeral.
I agree. Some of my, I don't know what the right word is, not fondest exactly, but some of my most meaningful memories as a Mason have come from attending funerals.
Yeah.
Sometimes for brethren I've known very well, like Tom Seal.
Yes. But
oftentimes, attending the funerals of brethren who I may have known in passing, but did not know well or did not know at all on a few occasions, especially when I first joined Masonry. You know, I was only a few months in, and there's a few Masonic deaths of, you know, from Windsor Lodge brethren who hadn't been out to lodge for a while. But, you know, you still went to those funerals. So it can be a very meaningful experience to attend a Masonic funeral.
When I became District Deputy Grand Master, the saying back then was, one of your first duties is going to be a funeral. I got home from Grand Lodge on a Saturday morning. Sunday evening, we had a funeral.
So there you go.
A brother by the name of Middleton, I believe his last name was. Oh, so I attended the funeral, kind of acted as the district deputy grand master at that funeral. This brother's daughter's name was Pat Middleton. She was a girl that I went to grade 10 with. So again, I thought, I really feel good that I'm able to officiate at her father's funeral. That made me feel really special. And when I got to the part that said, and God found him worthy for himself, I had a hard time to get that one out, because I just kept thinking of her and how much I knew her and how much that particular phrase means to me. So that again strengthens my belief that one of our best things we can do is go to a brother's funeral.
And, you know, this makes me think, just, you know, in my own life right now, I'm 36, so I'm at that age where my parents and my, my older relatives, right, are all getting to that age where the health problems start to pick up and all that. And just how important it is for, you know, men who are, like my father, who's older, any Masons who are older, to make sure that they let their families know if they want a Masonic funeral.
Yes.
In advance, and make sure it's written down somewhere so that they, so that there's no questions or the family isn't rushing around trying to figure out. To me, it's, you know, I think the most important thing would be organ donation first, making sure that that's people know what your views are on that. But then very close to that is making sure your family knows what your views are on a Masonic funeral.
Yes.
And even what you want done with your Masonic items and regalia and things like that. Making sure that's all written down.
My sister is my executor. And to be honest with you, I've made a CD of the music I would like to have played at my funeral. I've written down all my bank account numbers. There's certain items of mine that I would like to go to individual people. And my sister has all that. She knows my wishes. She knows that I would like a Masonic funeral. How to dress, what to do with my regalia. Like I also told her, there's a room upstairs in the blue room side, the coat room. And a lot of times, guys will hang tuxedos in there. And if you need a tuxedo and one fits, you take it.
Yeah.
And I said to my sister, you make sure that I got like three tuxedos, tailcoats. I said, you make sure that all of those get hung up in that room so that brothers coming up the line and at the moment, because when you first join Masonry, you might not be able to afford a tuxedo. And I said, make sure that my stuff goes there so that somebody can go along behind and get use of it. So my sister has all that information.
That my first tuxedo was a gift from Lodge.
It
was Windsor Lodge at the time. I was going to, because I didn't take an office right away when I joined because I was moving back and forth between Windsor and Ottawa pretty frequently. So I was a little bit later taking an office from when I joined. But when I did, John Churwack said, you'll need a tuxedo. So he took me shopping and bought me one out of Lodge funds. So... So he was, that was a nice moment. And the things that stuff like that brethren do for each other.
Right.
And just making sure it's planned out, as like you're saying, is so important.
Yes.
Whether it's talking about final wishes and your will, or even just in day-to-day planning out how you're going to help the lodge out and what you're going to do.
Yes.
Like you talked about record keeping earlier.
Yeah.
The importance of that, right? It all connects.
Well, for a while there, I was the chairman of the Central Masonic Bureau. And one of my biggest disappointments back then was it was hard to get the lodges to share information with you. But I really felt that, here's what used to happen now. When I was chairman of the
Central Masonic Bureau.
Central Masonic Bureau. There was a gentleman from Michigan who called me up and he says, my father was a Mason and I would like to know what I can about it. I said, you come to Windsor, you come to me. And so I took him downtown to the lodge and he happened to say, okay, my dad did this for a living. And I said, well, no. I believe he was a grocer. And he said, no, he was something else. So I found the ledger where his father had signed. And I said, here's where your father signed. And here's where he wrote down his occupation. And he wrote down grocer. He was very surprised at that. And what I did was I took that book over to our Xerox machine, copied the page, and I said, here is a sample of your father's signature. And this guy really like enjoyed the information that I was able to give to him, and that's only because we were keeping a history of our records. And that's why I feel history keeping is the best thing you can do.
I agree, and it's such a snapshot of Windsor's history and our city's history and just the county. I mean, going back through some of those records and You get an idea of, you know, in the early, you know, the building was built in 1921, the lodges date back to 1883, and in Great Western's case, you know, 1854. When people were joining, they were writing down not only, you know, their names, but their occupations, their, what dues were, you know,
yep.
So you get this idea of, in 1854, what were people... what were people working in? What were the common professions for men?
Yep.
What was inflation like? You know, you look at the dues back then, people paying $2 per year versus now.
I remember reading where dues were $2 a year.
It's such an amazing snapshot and so important to, you know, for census information and for learning about your city.
Yes.
And one of the things they're trying to do with the tours and everything like that is bring more of that to light.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you alone in a second because I've already got to stay 5 minutes past as long as I was told.
Yeah.
But before I go, I put up a video that will be coming out soon about the 2017 Cornerstone Ceremony we did at City Hall, which you took part in. Your picture's there.
Yeah.
And also,
I believe I was in a wheelchair at that time.
You were Jason.
I had gout so bad, I was in a wheelchair. Around about that time, a bunch of us Shriners went to visit the Montreal Hospital, Shrine Hospital in Montreal. And Brother Tom Moffat was pushing me around in my wheelchair. And we get on the elevator, and I said, "Tom, I really appreciate you wheeling me around for the tour here, but I'm getting really tired of you talking behind my back."
I'll have to ask him about that when I do his interview. So I just wanted to say I saw you on there, and it was great to have you up for that. And also, I hope you don't mind me saying, right, we're doing this interview with you in the hospital. Another interview I put up was with, or will be putting up, is with Morton Brodsky.
Yes, Morton's a great guy.
He is. He's one of my favorite people. Yeah. And we're actually talking about the history of masonry and blood donations.
Yes.
And how masons are, you know, known to be community-minded in one way is how dedicated we are to blood donations. So, just you being here, right, and needing some medical assistance, can you talk about how important, and how you feel about that, about Masons giving back to the community through blood donations and just all
and
the ways
you know what, back. Way back, I used to give blood on a regular basis. And because I had a blood disorder, in 89, they stopped me from giving blood. But one year, Brother Paul Hooper was chairman of the blood committee. And we were in Lodge. It was a special meeting because I was sitting in the steward's chair, and in the junior warden's chair was Brother John Blevins. So Paul gets down on the floor and he says, "We have a certificate to give out. This brother has given over 100 donations." And Blevin looks at me and he says, "Boy, he must be an old guy." Just then, Paul Hooper says, "So would Brother Ed Carey come to the floor?" I looked at Blevins and I said, "Old guy, eh?" You want to see the look on Brother Blevins' face when he realized it was me.
That's a great story. And that is a good story to end this on because...
All right.
I am 7 minutes past how long they said I could stay. Okay. I don't want a mean old battle ox of a nurse coming in and kicking me out.
Yeah, this crew that's on tonight is pretty good.
So, another thing, it's not a good thing, I guess, but it is part of masonry, right? Is especially when I was worshipful master and all the years I've visited a lot of brethren in hospitals, Met Campus, Olette Campus, and I've always been impressed with hospital staff. And
yes.
So it's a hard job, and they do a great job, and they should be proud. Did you know that we're at Olette Campus? This building was designed by the same architect that designed the Masonic Temple.
No, I didn't.
Pennington, yeah. Not the original. The original predates the Masonic Temple, but when they were doing updates on this building and additions, it was the same architect, Pennington, who designed it.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
And brother, I really appreciate you. You know, it gets lonely when you're in a hospital room and there's nothing to do. And so I really appreciate your visit. I thank you very much. And thanks for, you know, recording some of this. It's, I do have a few stories that I think need to be shared a little bit. So I thank you for allowing me to share some of these stories.
Well, I know you're going to get to share many more. Because, you know, you got to get back to Lodge eventually once all this... Once we're allowed to meet again. I mean,
yeah.
I'm hoping September myself, but...
Yes.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody needs to keep chasing Deirdre in line.
Yes.
Right? If not you, who knows who's going to keep him in line?
Right.
He's probably out there gallivanting and causing all sorts of trouble.